I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to examine the 2016 session of the Indiana General Assembly that just wrapped up. We're going to explore the good, the bad, and the ugly. We're going to talk about what the lawmakers did and what they didn't do. My guests are Zach Osowski of the Evansville Courier and Press and Shana Cavazos of Chalkbeat, Indiana. Please join the conversation by calling us at 866-476-3881, emailing us at nolimits@wfyi.org, finding us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI, or tracking us down on Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking today about the Indiana General Assembly session that just wrapped up. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Zach Osowski, who is with the Evansville Courier and Press, State House Bureau Chief there, and Shana Cavazos, who covers education for Chalkbeat, Indiana, primarily legislative issues associated with education. Welcome to both of you. It's good to have both of you here. And I should say, in the spirit of full disclosure, that Zach is a former student of mine. He's a Franklin College alum, PSJ.
And I still showed up.
Well, I'm grateful for that. You know, we old teachers. So in terms of this session, I've thought about the way to talk about this. It seems to me that there are a couple of ways that we can talk about this. One is to talk about the things that didn't happen at the session, and there are issues in sort of both of your areas where that was the case, and then the things that did happen, and then probably look at what is likely to have lasting impact, if anything. And, you know, the big one, the elephant in the room at the start of the session, was sort of whether the lawmakers were going to attempt to grapple with the RFRA fallout from last year, Religious Freedom Restoration Act, and look at ways to incorporate protections on the basis of sexual orientation and gender into the state's civil rights laws. Not much happened there, right, Zach?
No. They did take it up. The Senate took a stab at it, which and no one was sure quite how that was going to turn out, because it seems like in the legislature with huge bills, it takes a couple years for momentum to build up on things. So the Senate took a stab at it. Senator Travis Holdman authored two bills. Ultimately, one got out of committee that didn't have any rights for transgender individuals. The bill died basically in the Republican Senate caucus. Where they just couldn't reach an agreement on it. There were 27 amendments filed. Basically, the problem was nobody agreed on anything, and there was no room for compromise on it. You had Democrats that weren't happy that the transgender individuals were not included in the bill. You had some far right Republicans that didn't want to see that bill passed at all. So there was, I think Senator Holdman said it best, you know, he couldn't get either side to budge on it.
He was a guest on this show not long after that happened. And his response, I think his posture was pretty clear. It was pretty much he'd thrown up his hands and said, you know, what can I do here? And David Long actually had some fairly pointed comments about the unwillingness to grapple with the issue as well. Are there likely to be lasting hard feelings about that? Is it something that we will see coming back, do you think, Zach?
It seemed like the Senate, I don't know, Senator Long said after session was over, he had a presser with reporters, and he said it was a good educational experience for the Senate. and one that he thinks the House needs to have. So it was almost like he was saying, look, we're gonna let the House try to deal with this next session. So I think because there were so many pointed comments on both sides of the issue, really, you worry if there's an unwillingness now for another lawmaker to take that up. Because I think Senator Holdman heard a lot of negative comments from both sides on how he was trying to handle the issue.
He said, yeah, that he'd been threatened with a primary and all of that when he was on the air here. The other issue in education that kind of dominated, Shannon, was a lot of discussion coming into the session about the teacher shortage and all of that. What was done or not done in regard to that?
Well, I think there were some steps taken, definitely. I know that one of the biggest kind of successes of the session was Speaker Brian Bosma's bill that would kind of aim to get high school kids interested in pursuing teaching in college by giving them scholarships if they were in the top 20% of their graduating class or had a certain percentage of scores on the SAT or the ACT. And I think that is one thing that people are looking at as a way to just kind of raise up the idea of teaching as a more kind of prestigious, encouraged career to have. But that was kind of one of the few bills. There was lots of other teaching measures and language stuffed into some other bills about mentoring, you know, a few things about pay. But I do think that there was kind of a much bigger expectation going in than what we saw coming out.
And it's probably important to point out there was even some dispute about kind of the causes of the teacher shortage or even whether it existed. You know, I know that in the aftermath of the session, State Superintendent of Public Instruction Glenda Ritz sent out an op-ed in which she said absolutely nothing had been done about the teacher shortage and all of that. Where were the disconnects on that? Because it often seemed that people weren't even talking about with the same set of facts.
Well, the disconnect, I think, comes a little bit into the process, quite honestly. And you know, the superintendent held a number of panel discussions, or rather working sessions over the summer to try to really drill down into what the problem areas were and how they might be addressed and everything, any kind of legislation that came out of that. I know that I think it was a bill from Representative Truitt, if I remember correctly. All those bills just kind of ended up going nowhere. So I think there's some disconnect in exactly what needs to be done and whether it's really encouraging the supply side, which would be the teachers, the students entering the profession and getting kids interested, versus the demand side, which are teachers already in the classroom and what do they need and what do they want and what's going to keep them around. So I don't think there was quite an agreement between Republican and Democrat lawmakers about the best way to handle that. And some of the data quite honestly, is very fuzzy on what teachers want, what they, what actually keeps them in the classroom. It's not always as big of a money issue, I think, as people think it is.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about the Indiana Legislature's just completed session here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. Well, on the other issue that there was a lot of jousting about going into the session was sort of the state of Indiana's roads and bridges and, you know, what was going to be done about that. At one point, I think there were just three different Republican plans, not counting the plans advanced by Democrats, which, you know, had little other than symbolic value.
Right.
Zach, what did happen with roads and what didn't happen?
Well, like you said, there was a lot of talking about it. I think that was one of the big things that did happen. Eventually, they got to kind of a two-year agreement, which gives them more time to look at the issue and gives them time to get the budget in order, and they're going to try and put more permanent road funding into the budget that's going to be passed next year. I think the biggest problem was House Republicans thought that it was a good idea to raise taxes on cigarettes and raise gas or raise the fuel tax and pay for roads that way. The Senate Republicans and Governor Mike Pence, for whatever reason, whether it was the upcoming elections or they just wanted a little more time to look at the issue, said, you know, that that's not something we're interested in. We're not interested in raising taxes. And ultimately, they kind of came to this two-year agreement where locals get some money, states get some money, and they're going to try and find a more permanent solution this summer going into the budget next year.
How much of this was, it often seemed, looking at this, that the governor, the president pro tem of the Indiana Senate, and the House majority leader often were not on the same page.
Right.
That there was a lot of, and they all belong to the same party, so the assumption often is that they have the same interests, but that did not seem to be the case this year. I'd like your thoughts on each of that, because it overlapped into education as well, where you could see that they were floating different ideas and different proposals. Zach, you start, please.
Yeah, you could see right from the beginning House Speaker Brian Bosma was adamant about there being a need to find permanent road funding, and he and the Republican caucus in the House thought the best way to do that was to, like I said, raise the fuel tax, mm-hmm. raise the cigarette tax. And almost immediately you had Governor Pence and Speaker or the President of the Senate, David Long, adamantly opposed to that. Pence addressed it in his State of the State speech. He said we're not gonna look for options in Hoosier pockets, basically. So it was kind of an interesting dynamic where you had the three heads of the Republican Party basically in the state, and they were disagreeing on some pretty big issues that were facing the state this year.
How much of that played over into the education debate, Shana?
I think the biggest area of disconnect among Republicans was when it came to bills about teacher pay and how that should happen and kind of how it should be handled if it was going to be considered outside of union negotiations, which was on the table in a number of different bills this year. And at first, it kind of seemed like everyone was on the same page. Republicans and various other advocacy groups seemed to support the idea that teachers should be able to have more individual control over what they make, and that superintendents should be able to make decisions about hiring and wages that don't have to go before the union. And so we have, the bill was going through pretty steadily, and then kind of all of a sudden it dropped off. And clearly there was some uncertainty about whether this was a good measure and whether it was something the teachers approved of. And so you could definitely see some tension between House and Senate Republicans in what might happen next.
And because this is an election year, one has to ask, I mean, Zach referred to Mike Pence, who's the governor, and the Speaker of the House, Brian Bosma, and then the President Pro Tem of the Indiana Senate, David Long, as the three top Republicans in the state. How much of this was about determining who was going to be the top Republican in the state?
You know, I don't know if that played in as much as the immediate election. David Long has a primary opponent mm-hmm. coming up in May. I don't think Speaker Bosma does, but obviously Pence has the big election coming up, the rematch with John Gregg. So I think for Long and Pence, I think the election coming up in November definitely played a part in that. They didn't want to have tax increases on their record that their opponent could try and exploit.
The other dynamic is that that's going on, and Shana, it plays over into education as well, is that the House for years, while Republicans often had majorities, the supermajority is a relatively recent thing. The Senate, on the other hand, Republicans have had commanding majorities there for more than 20 years. So, you know, there was a dynamic where there'd be a lot of skirmishing over in the House, and on the Senate side, that sort of became the killing fields because the president pro tem had more control over it's always been a he so far, his caucus. How much of this is that the dynamic is shifting between the House and the Senate?
I mean, I think it, from my experience, that that's absolutely been true. You see a lot more decision making coming down on the House side than on the Senate side. And I think for the teacher pay issue, at least, it was a little bit of a power play.
We are talking about the Indiana legislative session, Indiana General Assembly legislative session that just wrapped up, I guess about a week and a half ago. If you would like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. My guests are Zach Osowski, the Evansville Courier and Press, and Shana Cavazos of Chalkbeat, Indiana. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking about the wrap-up of the Indiana legislative session on No Limits today. My guests are Zach Osowski, the Evansville Courier and Press, and Shana Cavazos of Chalkbeat, Indiana. Before we got to the break, I talked a little bit about whether there was a shifting dynamic in the power roles between the House and the Senate. Got Shana's thoughts on that, but I'd like to hear yours as well, Zach.
Well, I agree with Shana's thoughts that it seems like more and more there's big ideas coming out of the House that they want to see incorporated. And there's definitely a little bit of a power struggle, I think, going on. You see it especially in the last day of session when things are going back and forth. I think we saw it a little bit in the abortion bill that I'm sure we'll get to later, where the Senate put a change in and they basically said, hey, House, if you want to pass this, you're going to have to accept our changes without much deliberation. So I do see a little bit of a power play, especially now that they have supermajorities in both chambers.
Well, and we've talked a bit about the things that didn't happen, that there really wasn't, a long-term solution to the road funding problem. There was no real meaningful steps forward on civil rights for LGBTQ citizens in the state, and only sort of minor grappling with the idea of a teacher shortage. Probably time to talk about what did happen, what things they did get done. And actually, there were a fair number of significant measures in regard to education that they did deal with, starting with, obviously, ISTEP.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. And, Governor Pence signed the bill into law today, actually, to end ISTEP as we know it, is what's kind of been the phrase. And it pretty much means that after 2017, kids will be taking a different test. And we don't really know what that looks like yet.
So we sort of sawed the plank off behind us here without any idea where we're going to go next, right?
A little bit, especially just coming out of a very hectic couple of years in regards to writing a new test. I think there'd be some people who would say they'd like a more concrete plan before we just did away with and repealed all kinds of law.
So why did they dump ISTEP without knowing where they were going next?
I think a lot of the discontent came from last year's test, which just kind of hit every bad turn that it possibly could. And we saw that with some delays that were the fault of the testing vendor. They were having some issues scoring, and so that kind of pushed things back. And then there were also a few other administrative, I think, glitches is the term. And that just kind of also follows a number of years of technical glitches and testing that Indiana has seen over a couple different tests, a couple different years of testing. So I think people are a little bit fed up with the uncertainty and the instability of the test, but are maybe exchanging that for a different kind of uncertainty and instability in a new test.
What's the best guess about what will emerge to replace ISTEP?
Well, it really depends a lot on what the U.S. Department of Education decides they would like to see. We're still waiting on rules that relate to the No Child Left Behind replacement law, the Every Student Succeeds Act. And so we won't be getting that until later this year, and it could be a little while. But my best guess from the reporting that I've been doing is that we're still going to have a test, and it's probably, at least to the kids taking it, going to still be answering different kinds of questions for a certain period of time. I don't see any huge monumental changes coming down the pike.
Would it be something that would be more universal or uniform, though, with other states? Or are we going to continue to say we are Indiana and we do things our own way?
Well, Governor Pence said today that he is always coming from a local perspective when it comes to testing, and that's a side he kind of wants to remain on. And the superintendent as well has said that she also appreciates Indiana's ownership over its test. So it doesn't seem like it's likely that they will completely abandon ship on having Indiana taking the charge on writing the questions and creating the content. But, I mean, I think anything's possible at this point. It's really hard to rule anything out at this very early stage of the game.
What other big changes were there in education?
We definitely saw some concern over the state's dual credit program, and that's where high school students can take classes in high school to earn college credit. And I think it was actually an act of the legislature just a few years ago to give or to require that all schools in the state offer at least two of those classes. So now there's been a bit of an uproar because the big accrediting institution for the state of Indiana and a bunch of other states has said that teachers have to have a very specific kind of education. And a lot of teachers won't have that master's degree in their content area. So it's kind of upended the system that we have. And I know that Representative Wendy McNamara made it kind of her mission to try to address the problem by helping schools find a way forward for their teachers.
Was there any movement on charter schools, vouchers, or anything like that?
There was. Vouchers was kind of an extension of a deadline, really, which I know that some saw as an expansion of the program. Others saw it as parity between public schools and charter schools as far as when kids can apply. But essentially what it means is students will have more time to apply for a voucher going into the second semester of a school year than just being limited to the first semester.
Okay. And Zach, you alluded a little while ago to the issue that kind of became the hot button and is the one that is most discussed about right now, and that is the abortion bill that emerged from this legislative session. Could you first describe what that bill does, and then we can talk about kind of the fireworks that accompanied it?
Yeah, it's House Bill 1337, which started out as just a bill to kind of police how fetal remains are disposed of at hospitals. But when it became clear that a Senate bill kind of talking about abortion wasn't going to go anywhere in the House, the Senate slid its language into House Bill 1337. It kind of became the vehicle for it. What it basically does is it says physicians aren't allowed to perform an abortion if the mother of the child says she's having the abortion based on the sex of the fetus, the gender of the fetus, or any sort of developmental disability that's identified while the fetus is still growing. And that, like you said, has sparked a lot of fireworks.
First question is, as we drill down into it, how are they supposed to determine that? And at some level, I mean, can doctors be compelled to testify against their patients? Isn't there a seal of confidentiality there?
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question with regard to this bill. You heard a lot of people in the House say that they thought the Senate changes were poorly written. They weren't quite sure how this was going to be practically carried out. Because it says if that's the only reason the woman's having the abortion, then the physician's not allowed to perform it. So that makes a lot of people wonder, well, okay, is the woman just going to lie to her doctor? How are they going to determine what the sole cause of the abortion was? Are they going to be able to read people's minds, or or really understand what their thoughts are going into it. So I think it's going to be interesting to see if this gets signed into law, how the state's going to enforce this policy.
Who is pushing for this?
I know that Senator Mike Young was a big proponent of it. Senator Liz Brown over in the Senate, they both spoke strongly in favor of it. I believe they were the authors of the Senate bill that died over in the House, and they were pushing that this is pro-life, that they're protecting the unborn, those that don't have a voice. Obviously, some people disagree with them.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about the legislative session, Indiana General Assembly session, that just wrapped up. If you would like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. What were some of the bills that flew under the radar screen, the things that did become law, that not a lot of people paid attention to? I'll start with Shana on that one.
I think there was an interesting bill that kind of came as the result of some concerns that charter school leaders had earlier this year about their federal Title I funding, which is money that typically goes to help support programs for kids from low-income families. And there had been a discrepancy made at some point in the calculating process. We're still a little bit unsure of exactly what happened that caused these schools to get a lot less money than they were expecting. And they, you know, project their budgets out pretty far and saw that this was going to be a problem. So it kind of blew up, I believe, in September or early October that this money just wasn't coming in. And in House Bill 1330, I believe, there was a provision that says that the Indiana Department of Education must make very clear how they are determining funding for Title I programs in schools. And it kind of, I think, very quietly perhaps addressed some of the issues that those schools had been seeing. And it'll be interesting next year when budgets are made and everyone's calculating again to see if this had an effect and to see, I guess, what the department plans to do as far as making sure that all of these different things are communicated to schools as they're making their plans.
Why didn't it receive more attention?
I think it was a bill that at the outset just wasn't super exciting. There weren't a lot of fireworks around it. This was language that was kind of deeper into the bill that you might not notice unless you're a reporter trying to read through all the legislation. But I forget what the leading part of the bill was. I apologize. But I think it just, quite honestly, was deep down. This was a bill that had multiple things in it. And I don't think people just generally always take the time to read every single word.
We are talking about the wrap-up of the Indiana General Assembly legislative session here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, on Twitter at WFYI, or you can do what a listener named Alan has done and give us a call at, well, it looks like we just lost Alan. He must have lost his signal. At 866-476-3881. Zach, real quickly, I'm going to ask the same question. What was a bill that had some significance that kind of flew under the radar screen that people just didn't pay attention to?
Yeah, there were a lot of far-reaching they kind of did bills all over the scope. The one that I covered a little bit that I thought was interesting that maybe didn't get as much attention as some of the bigger issues was the Daily Fantasy Sports bill. Mm-hmm. I think we've all seen DraftKings or FanDuel mm-hmm. commercials, and there's been a lot of controversies surrounding that. Is it gambling? Is it a game of chance, or is it a game of skill? Depends on if you're getting paid by FanDuel or DraftKings, kind of how you view that. But Indiana decided that they were going to legalize it, put some parameters on it, and went ahead and passed it into law. Now we're still not sure what the governor's view on that's going to be, if he's going to sign it or just let it go or veto it. But I think considering all the lawsuits that we've seen, all the states that have banned it outright, saying it's gambling, that was one that maybe flew under the radar a little bit.
How much money was involved in that, too? I mean, that's always the thing that boggles my mind.
Yeah, I don't know if they've really ever put a figure on it, but they said somewhere close to 1 million Hoosiers played daily fantasy sports just last year. Obviously, most of that is in football. I think how much money depends on what kind of game you're playing. Some of them are just $1 games, $2 games. But I think they can go all the way up to $50 games. So you're talking about a significant amount of money that's changing hands basically online. And in Indiana, there were really no parameters at all around who can play, how to keep track of the winnings, who is winning the money, that kind of thing. So I think lawmakers were faced with an option of either, okay, we're going to say this is illegal, or we're going to put some parameters on it, and they chose the second option.
What is the measure that came out of this session that you think is going to have the most lasting impact on the way Hoosiers live their lives? Shane, I'm going to throw that one to you because there was activity on education first. What's the one that's going to make the biggest difference?
Oh, I think it's hard to argue that the testing bill won't have the most impact. I mean, the fact that we're changing the entire state's testing program for hundreds of thousands of kids. And, you know, we've heard a lot of feedback from educators that this can be very stressful for kids and that some parents aren't happy with the dynamic as well. And so I think this could make, I don't know if it's a positive or negative difference, but it definitely will make a difference for a lot of families in the next few years.
We are talking about the wrap-up of the just completed session of the Indiana General Assembly. Margaret, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Certainly. What's on your mind?
Well, there was a couple of things that just sort of stuck in my craw that I heard the both reporters say. One, the one reporter referred to vouchers for charter schools, and you don't need a voucher for a charter school. It's vouchers for private schools and parochial schools. That's what the bill affected. And secondly, the gentleman was talking about the abortion bill, and he referred to the mother of the child. Mm-hmm. And when a woman is pregnant, she's just not a child and she's not a mother yet. And he also said that the bill would give voice back to the voiceless, but what it does is take the voice away from that pregnant woman.
Thanks very much for the call and the comments, Margaret. Thanks for listening.
Certainly.
So this illustrates, obviously, you know, how seriously people take the language on these questions. Does that make it difficult to cover? I mean, short sessions have always been dominated by hot button issues. And the session we just came out of is a short one. You're headed into election, so there's a lot of red meat that gets thrown on both sides of the aisle. Does that make it difficult to cover? Because a lot of these issues do have a lot of emotion attached to them. Shana.
Of course. And it's hard to... You know, it's hard at times to always be cognizant of every single viewpoint, but we certainly try, especially when it's for things that people care as much about as, you know, things like education and health and their children.
Zach.
Yeah, it definitely plays a factor. And I think the caller's point is, you know, it shows that just the way you refer to something can have a lasting impact on a person one way or another. So, yeah, with hot button issues, and we saw a lot of them from roads to civil rights to abortion. There was a lot of hot button issues that you've got to wade through carefully as a reporter.
Is it hard to find the nomenclature? You know, to make the word choices there so that that you are trying to establish a neutral tone.
Yeah, and we're always trying to be careful and be respectful of all sides and you know, our goal is to be completely neutral. And yeah, you go through that battle daily of, okay, is this word okay? Am I using this word too much? How do I say this in a way that's going to get the point across without offending anyone? Because obviously that's not what we're trying to do.
We are talking about the conclusion of the Indiana General Assembly's legislative session. My guests are Zach Osowski, the Evansville Courier and Press, and Shana Cavazos of Chalkbeat, Indiana. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. I'm John Krall. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking today about the wrap-up of the Indiana General Assembly's 2016 legislative session. My guests are Zach Osowski, who's the State House Bureau Chief for the Evansville Courier and Press, and Shana Cavazos, who is with Chalkbeat Indiana. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI, on Twitter at WFYI, or you can do what a listener named Debbie has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Debbie, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hello. What's on your mind?
It's 1337, and there's very large issues when you pass or try to pass legislation that is this divisive, because in a larger perspective, as the other caller said, you are now taking the ability to self-determine what is important to you and to your family, what you can handle, what you cannot handle, what is out there that would treat potential problems and don't exist. And where are the services for these said children? Their services for special ed and for special need is paltry in this state. It's woefully inadequate. So then you would have to say there should be no testing of fetuses, because obviously you don't want to have to deal with those issues. Or you would go out of state or out of country in order to have an abortion if you were wealthy enough.
Thank you very much for the call and
you're welcome.
And the comment. Thanks, Debbie. Take
okay,
care.
Bye.
Sure. Bye-bye. So, Zach, on this, I've got to assume, and in the interest of full disclosure with the audience, I've said this before, but for those of you who are first time, former executive director of what would now be the ACLU of Indiana, so I'm sort of familiar with the terrain here. What comes next in regard to something like House Bill 1337? If it is signed into law, I have to assume that there's going to be litigation somewhere.
Yeah, that seemed to be the next logical step for the bill if it is signed into law. Governor Pence wasn't clear when we talked to him, I think the day after the session, on whether, you know, he said he still had to look at it, that kind of stuff. But I think a lawsuit would probably be the next course of action, just because that seems like uncharted territory for a lot of pieces. So we'll see. And we asked Brian Bosma about that, and he said that, you know, they weren't sure if a lawsuit was going to come from that. Maybe it would, maybe it wouldn't, but that wasn't going to change how they voted on it.
We've gotten a question via Facebook from a listener named Deanne. And if you'd like to reach out to us via Facebook, you can do so and find us at No Limits WFYI. Deanne says, just joined the conversation and simply wish to offer my disappointment that a bill that further restricts women's right to abortions, as well as insisting that a cremation or burial be provided by the women for the aborted siloblast, etc. I guess I should ask, because there's a lot of this. What problem was this trying to solve? I mean, what problem was this bill attempting to address?
In regard to the fetal remains, I think the idea was that hospitals were treating, and these could either be aborted remains or fetal remains from a miscarriage. Hospitals were disposing of them as medical waste, which I think rubs people, legislators, the wrong way. They wanted to see a little bit more dignity for the deceased fetuses. So that's kind of where it started, where they said, okay, you can't toss them out as medical waste. Now you need to cremate them or have some sort of burial take place. And And there were some funding mechanisms set up to help families with that, because that can be expensive. But I think that's where the jumping off point for the bill was.
So it sounds like there are going to be fresh rounds of fights about reproductive rights going forward out of this.
Yeah, and it was funny because this thing kind of came out of nowhere. It was, they were floating around, but then all of a sudden, with a week to go, I can't remember if it was the second to last day or the third day, they brought this up in the House, and it was definitely a firestorm in the House. Mm-hmm. There were a lot of passionate arguments on both sides, and some of it was the pro-life versus women's rights argument, and the other side of it was just the Senate trying to cram language in that the House didn't properly vet, which some of the representatives were upset about as well.
Shana, I gotta, the other hot education has actually been kind of a minefield as well here in the state for the past half dozen or so years. Do we see any signs that the fighting there over, the broad issues of education reform, which touches vouchers, touches charters, touches even the teacher shortage question and all of that, that's going to abate in any way?
I think the simple answer is probably not. This is still a state and a city that is deeply divided about traditional schooling versus education reform. I don't think that gets talked about enough, about how there are people, truly large amounts of people on both sides, and who feel very strongly about it. As far as the issue of testing, I certainly hope that some of the back and forth dies down, because I think it's been made very clear by educators, both on the state board and just across the state, they'd like to see some things settle down for their kids so that they can kind of get a handle on what's coming next. So, on the very big philosophical issues, no, I think, Hoosiers will continue to talk about them and figure out what they like and what they don't like. But on maybe some of the subcategories of testing and accountability, hopefully some new legislation maybe could put some of those fights to bed.
If you're just joining us, we are talking about the Indiana General Assembly, what it did and what it didn't do here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI, on Twitter at WFYI, or you can do what Diane has done and give us a call here at 866-476-3881. Diane, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you.
Certainly.
I actually am calling in about the abortion bill. I think one of the things that a lot of people haven't quite realized with the burial requirement now that's been instituted, and I don't know if the lawmakers did this intentionally or if it was just they didn't really fully research it, but now for a woman to go into a funeral home and ask, to have the tissue cremated or buried or whatever, the way the law is worded, the funeral home will have to get permission from the male sperm donor. And so a lot of funeral homes are telling people like Planned Parenthood that they're not willing to get involved in the legalities of that. It's too risky for them.
Thanks very much for the call and the comment. We'll run it by our panel here. Thank you again, Diane.
Yep. Thank you.
Certainly. Zach.
I think this just goes into how complicated the issue can be. You start peeling back the layers and you run into more problems. And I think the caller's right that, maybe that's not something the funeral homes want to get involved in. And it's a very complicated issue.
So then that creates a problem of access, too, in effect. You call for a certain kind of solution, the law calls for a certain kind of solution, and the means for achieving that solution may not be readily available.
Right. And we do see that occasionally where lawmakers will come up with a new bill, and the next year they're in there to tweak it a little bit, because you always run into, you can never think of every single possible solution that might come out of it. And that might be one that they didn't think about.
Did you get any sense with this or with any of the bills that there was any kind of buyer's remorse by the end of the session that, maybe we shouldn't have done that?
I don't think any of the bills that got passed, I didn't sense that with a whole lot. But I don't know if there were any education bills. I know with the teacher pay bill, that was one that at the end they kind of went, oh, wait a minute, maybe this isn't a good idea.
Sure.
Well, and I think that we absolutely saw that. This was an issue that kind of didn't come from nowhere. There's been legislation in the past that looks to make union negotiation less of a, I guess, barrier, as some people might see it, to pay negotiations. But, you know, it just kind of seemed there came a point in the session after a lot of vocal opposition from the union and from teachers who just didn't think that this was the best way forward, that lawmakers kind of turned tail and said, hey, we should leave this for the future. But I do think it'll be revisited. Nobody seemed like they wanted to let the idea completely go.
Gotten an email from a listener named Jerry. If you want to reach out to us via email, you can do so at nolimits@wfyi.org. Jerry says, ISTEP is abominable. Students are being taught how to take the ISTEP instead of the subjects covered. Indiana legislators are basing their legislation on their personal religious views instead of those commonly held by all religions. You know, in terms of this, you wouldn't think that a standardized test would provoke those kinds of reactions. But what is it about the whole ISTEP and testing question that has made that issue so charged and so emotional, Shana?
I think it might be some of the disconnect between what parents, teachers, and kids are experiencing on the ground and what kind of policy is being formed up above. You know, it's impossible for a lawmaker or a policymaker to be, you know, go in every single classroom. But I think there maybe could be something to be said for consistency. And I think people are tired of having the ground or the rug, you know, pulled out from underneath them. So I think a lot of the anger and the passion really comes from wanting to find a way forward that is, you know, going to help kids learn what we think they need to know and not necessarily become a stumbling block to their learning.
Will that question, and this goes back a long time. I mean, in the first years when standardized tests were adopted in Indiana as an accountability measure, you know, 30 years ago or so, I think in the first 20 years that the tests were administered, legislatures changed the test something like 21 times, which which diminished its value as a standard. So, you know, by a standard, you want to be able to track progress a long time. Do you think there's ever going to get, we're going to get to a point where these questions are somewhat settled and we can get to the point where we are administering the same test year after year and can chart progress by it?
I don't know. You know, there's so much in education where people are looking for results very quickly because it, you know, these are kids coming in and their learning and their education is what's at stake. So I think people want quick solutions and they want to see things change if they're not working. But I think sometimes they might overlook the long game there and what's to value from that.
We are talking about the Indiana General Assembly. Carol, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Certainly.
And I have three concerns about what was passed in this last session. Number one, where the, I don't know the bill number, but they allow deer hunting within a fenced area. I just think that is so cruel and inhumane. That's the first one. The second one has to do with local rule, and our Republican government often says they want to keep things at local rule, yet when a local area passed legislation to prevent the use of plastic bags, they overrode that through the state, and the same thing was true when they passed legislation in the state after the local rule did not want the sale of alcohol at the Dune State Park. So I'd just like to hear what your guests have to say about those things.
Thanks very much for the call and the questions, Carol.
Thanks.
Zach.
Hey, two bills we haven't talked about yet.
Yes.
We'll
smart
start
audience
the,
here. They, yeah, they pay attention.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
I'll start with the fenced hunting bill. That was one where a ruling by the Indiana Supreme Court basically said that the governing body that was kind of keeping an eye out on fenced hunting preserves in Indiana didn't have the right to basically make the rules. I think it was the Indiana Department of Environmental Management or something like that. So basically, there were no rules regarding fenced hunting preserve. So the lawmakers, again, were faced with the option, do we ban these or do we try and put some guidelines in on how they can operate and manage these fenced hunting preserves? And they chose to go with the second option. Basically, what it, I mean, and as rural as Indiana is, there are some areas where people can't get out and go hunt. So these hunting preserves are these big, I think they're 80 to 100 acres, and they're fenced in, and they bring in deer population or mountain goats if you're into that kind of thing. And people come in, they pay a fee, they go out and they hunt the deer that are kept in these enclosures. And these have been going on for a long time. But like I said, the Supreme Court ruling said, okay, there's no laws regarding these now. So lawmakers said, okay, we need to step in and make some rules for them.
And the other two, the local control issues, that's a persistent argument that, the state, and it's an old one.
Yeah.
The state legislators balk when the federal government
yeah.
does mm-hmm. that to them, but they don't seem to be reluctant to do it to local communities.
Yeah, and I think it's a case-by-case basis, and I think people, lawmakers, like to be in charge, and the situation in Bloomington where they were trying to outlaw plastic bags for pollution concerns, that was one where they didn't think Bloomington ought to be doing that to the residents, so they said, sorry, you can't do that. And you can debate as long as you want. You're absolutely correct that state lawmakers get mad when the federal government says, hey, you have to do this certain way. But I think it's a trickle down effect, and we've seen that go on for years. And unfortunately, it's probably going to continue.
We're getting close on time here, so I'm going to ask, as we pointed out, this is an election year, and there's a lot going on. Which of these issues that we've talked about today do you think we're going to hear the most about as we head into the primary season, and then in the general election, Shana?
I think teachers are really ready to make their voices heard. I think that was a big reason why there was a step back from the pay bill. Republicans said they didn't want to be seen as anti-teacher. So I think going into an election year, that's an important population, a big population of people who have a lot of strong feelings about the way that the state should go.
Zach?
I think road funding and civil rights are going to be the two main topics that we hear the most about, especially in the governor's race. The Indiana Democrat Party has been very critical of Pence and his handling of both issues, and I don't think that's going to go away as we head towards November.
And that probably will have to be the last word. I would like to thank my guest, Zach Osowski, who's State House Bureau Chief for the Evansville Courier and Press, and Shana Cavazos, who is with Chalkbeat Indiana. I'd like to thank both of you. I enjoyed talking with you.
Thanks, John.
Thanks so much.
And I also would like to thank all of our listeners, particularly the ones who phoned in or sent us the great questions. It's always a pleasure to hear from you. I am John Kroll. We're going to be back on Thursday when we're going to be talking about anti-defamation issues. You have been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Executive producer, Michelle Johnson. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive media coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And board engineer, Joe Hatcher. Abby Cerzini screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.